guys, welcome back to the Between Dreams podcast. This show is all about people who are not only dreaming about things, but going out and making them happen. Today's guest is Jonah Babbins.
It's his real name.
I just found out. I said it's the best stage name ever. And I was like, is that your actual real name? It sure is.
And my mother knew.
And speaking of stage names, we're talking about a little bit about showbiz today, magic, as we often lean into that world on this show. Variety performers, magicians, jugglers, that whole world is very familiar to most of the listeners to this show. And I think this is going to be particularly cool because it's always especially fun to talk with entertainers who happen to have a podcast as well, because there's just something about that world of just like knowing how to chat about things. So that's going to be really fun to chat about your podcast. And there's a bunch of stuff. Yeah, I see that in the back of your frame there, Toronto Magic Company. We'll get into some of that. We'll get into your podcast. We'll get into you performing.
There's the book. There's a plan that's just for fun, but there's a lot of stuff we can talk about.
An actual bookshelf, and then
it's over there. Actually, funny, not to go off on a tangent, but when we started in the pandemic doing shows, we were very bookshelf centric, and then just instantly everybody had bookshelves. Not just magicians; every human being's background was bookshelves. And then we were like, okay, time to get an actual like set and background. We've done bookshelf. We built a theater inside of our house and had a theater curtain for 6 months on the other side of our house. And then we switched over to this because it was just a little bit more ergonomic for the way the house works. Yeah, we've had a ton of crazy setups.
I love that. So yeah, we're going to get into a ton of that stuff. And especially one of the things that I wanted to jump in with you is now how you're really helping performers and entertainers and people creating things, going out and I hate to use the word coaching, but in that world of really being somebody,
what I call it, I love it.
Yeah, and becoming a resource for people to expand and just grow in being better at whatever they're creating. So before we jump into all of those specifics, I'd leave a little bit of space for you to give a little bit of that backstory. How did you get here? Talk a little bit about that performance world, and then how did that expand into all of the things you're doing? The elevator version of all of those things, a quick little backstory. Performer that now is expanding into it like an enterprise of a bunch of different things. How do you get from A to B to get here in a 2 minute version?
So when I grew up and I like doing magic, but I never thought I would take it seriously. I would say that I like doing magic, but I didn't like all the other stuff. I didn't like having to get these photos and these things and going to market myself and all that. Anyways, as time went on, I went to university, got a degree in math, and spent my time listening to podcasts about people succeeding in online business. That could be being a magician, that could be creating brands, that could just lots of different stuff. I was learning from people who educated in the how to make money online, but like that now is such a sleazy, it's always, you have to dodge the sleazy version of that. But I think there are really authentic people that are going, hey, things like email lists are effective, things like social media is effective in this way and that way. Here's how you, anyways. So that's how that completely flipped on its head. And I went, hey, I love marketing, and there's no subject that I know on the planet better than magic, and let's just give this thing a go. So I graduated school, and all in 1 year, I went full-time as the magician. I had already been performing at camps and stuff like that. I went full-time as a magician. That's number one. The second thing that happened was I started the Discourse in Magic podcast with a friend of mine, Tyler Williams, who has now stepped away after a couple of years, which was to interview magicians of the world to, you know, get answers to all of our questions. And then also in that same year, I started the Toronto Magic Company with Ben Train, putting on public shows around Toronto. I don't know. I think I was bored. Noah Kagan, who is an amazing online marketer, said something once that's really stuck with me. He said, you're worried about one of your projects succeeding if instead of you launching one project, you launch three. Uh-huh. And I actually, like, as an entrepreneur, that really resonates with me. I don't know if that resonates with you too. You have all these different things in the fire, and it's like kind of obvious that like any one of them could actually work if you like put your mind to it, but you're just trying to hedge your bets. And this one go, you're like, okay, let's work on this one a bit. Okay, let's work on this one a bit. So that's probably why it happened. as time went on, Jonah Babin's performing personally merged with the Toronto Magic Company for ease of everything. So did Ben Train performing personally. So now it acts as an agency for ourselves and is a little easier to book ourselves out. We did 20, aside from doing a weekly open mic night in Toronto every week for magicians, we had a sold out series called The Art of Magic, which brought magicians in. 26 sold out shows over the course of 2 years. Rented out some huge theaters after things have just been working, sold out. Rented out the biggest theaters we'd ever rented out, and pandemic. Yeah. So we refunded everything. Everyone's got this like pandemic story of how it ruined their life and they're about to be a millionaire. So you know, I don't want to belabor it, but it was very frustrating that things were really growing and snowballing and our name of putting on these events in Toronto was growing and then completely dead. So we rested, we ripped our hair out, and then we just went 150,000% virtual, and we did lots of virtual magic shows, and we still are, and we really, really, really love it. We started a virtual magic convention, which we're now putting on our fourth, happening at the end of the month in August. I don't know when this is coming out, but in August, the end of the month, is our fourth, called unconventional.fun. And I went from mildly helping magicians to grow their business to really, during the pandemic, go, hey, we're all in the exact same boat. So come with me. I'm going to be figuring it out and let's go. But I think that mentality helped a lot of people. And along the way, I've been trying to educate and work with magicians for a long time. And I think the combination of all the free time that everybody had to actually work on it and talk about it made me switch from writing blog posts or making videos to coaching, which is one-on-one conversations, understanding where you're at, benefiting from group conversations, and other amazing things that come from coaching, events, reframing, all this wonderful stuff. And to me, being able to see the change and affect the change, and when someone hits a roadblock, not them deciding to give up the course or stop reading the book like we all do halfway through stuff, to be able to literally work with people. And it was fun for me, and people have just been getting great results because it's not, hey, here, go read this and do this. So that, hopefully, I know I went up maybe a little bit long, but that's the life story of how I went from I'm a magician who doesn't really care about marketing to I am a marketer who is doing lots of different fun stuff in the world of magic.
That's awesome. So to go, and thanks for that. That was perfect. A cool explanation of that. And I think one thing that particularly resonates in that is that thing, and I think we're going to really stick on this, of trying a bunch of different things of, oh, hey, this is a thing that I'm interested in, start off as the one thing, performer or whatever people are doing. And then seeing that how adjacent and how many of those skills are relevant to a thing that's adjacent. For me, that was like being a variety performer, particularly in the juggling world, and then learning how to make videos. And now pretty much not booking juggling shows, but making videos and content full time. And using everything I've learned from the juggling world and video capturing content from performers in the way that I capture videos and now podcasts and creating, producing content for other people, all of those things. So the question is, in those, and you've hit at it in the intro of sometimes just feeling bored, sometimes not knowing if which one is going to work. What is that balance of, for you, because at the beginning, people start as a performer, say, and then they start to branch out into these other things. But there's this lingering thing that I hear from so many people, and including myself, of, oh, if I stop being a performer, I failed at performing. So how do you address that of moving past that of, if I linger in this thing, I'm just attached to this thing because I've dedicated 10 years or 15 years, my entire life to this thing. But it might be a better choice to move on to coaching other people or creating content for other people. How did you make that thing of totally not feeling attached to feeling like, oh, I'm giving up in a way to my performance? And I know you're still doing it, but in a way of like, oh, because there's a thing of, oh, you're coaching other people because you failed yourself. There's that little bit of a thing that you hear sometimes.
Yeah. So first of all, I am still currently unfortunately, quite busy full-time performer, as well as running events, producing shows, and coaching. So I wish I could tell you so much that I know about the world of leaving one thing behind and going and changing to a different, because to be honest, I actually am not really the best at saying no to things. I'm much better at saying yes and figuring out how to, with my team and whatever, get the whole thing to happen. So I am still currently a full-time performer. That being said, the things you're talking about are identity issues that we all have. And especially with respect to, like, when somebody says to you, what do you, like, hi, nice to meet you, tell me about yourself. The first thing that we say is what we do. I'm a magician, right? So it's very hard to have an identity robbed from you that you've been, you know, calling yourself your entire life, and now all of a sudden it's robbed from you. Similarly speaking, I love being a magician. I love doing magic. I hate telling people that I just met that I am a magician. No, like, I will tell them I'm an accountant just for the sake of not having to go through the whole rigmarole of their demeanor. I haven't even figured out a way to say it. I've been a magician for 10 years. I haven't figured out the right, or not 10 years, my whole life, 20 years. And I have not figured out a way to say it that, like, feels good, but I love being, just to give you an example, right? I hope, I'm just playing with both ends of the spectrum, is it's my identity. And also, it's always been a silly thing that I've been a magician. And I think it's completely different for everybody. If you in high school said to yourself, I want to be a magician, and university, you said, I'm here in film school so that I can, or here in theater school so that I can learn how to act, so I can be on stage and be in the lights just like Eugene Berger and whatever. Yeah, well, I think it probably might be a disappointment if halfway through your career, you choose to completely go and do a different thing. If you want to, if it's good for you, if it's great, do it. But I can understand how it may feel like it's tied to your identity. On the flip side, I know myself, I didn't get into magic because I was born to be on stage or born to perform. I got into magic because I was studying math. It was fine. And there was way more people interested in hiring me to perform, talk to me, get on the podcast. There was just more interest, more buzz, more whatever about all of the magic that I was doing and all of what I was creating in that world than was anybody saying to me, hey, could you, like, solve this quadratic or whatever nonsense? And after, it was just obvious to me that which of these two fields is going to be more exciting. One, I was in the top 25% of my class. Great. I wasn't in the top 5% of my math class. I was in the top 25, maybe sometimes 30 or 40% of my class. Okay, I maybe not going to get the bet. It just became really obvious to me that my answer is going to be somewhere here in magic. So for me, I've always known that my career is going to be in magic broadly. I don't know if it's going to be performing. I don't know if it's going to be producing. I don't know. I have no idea. As time goes on, it's proving for me to be less and less performing. I like it. It's fun for me. I think when I think about having a coaching meeting, I get fired up all day. And when I think about going on stage to perform, I get anxious all day. And even though both of those things are fun for me, I'm just looking at the grand scope of things and I'm going, hey, I think I'd rather be excited than be nervous. And I still love performing. It's still great. But just in the grand scheme of things, that's a realization that I'm coming to. And it's tough and it's slow and it's weird. And I don't have a good answer. That's just maybe a little bit of both sides of the pie and maybe how I've been thinking about it. I don't know if that helps.
Yeah. And absolutely. And I think this just sparked in my mind. It might feel like a little bit of a tangent, but it's going to be good. What I was listening to some of your podcast earlier today. I was bouncing around some of the episodes, and that thing what you were just talking about of being able to jump into a coaching meeting and you just get excited. I think that was what towards a few years ago when I was just starting to get burned out on performing and moving over to creating content rather than being on stage. It was the same thing. I was just like, I realized more and more how many shows I was only saying yes to just because of the money. And it was like, oh, that's not a good thing to be excited. The most exciting thing about a lot of those shows was the paycheck afterwards. I was like, this is not a great place to be. Kind of flip this a little bit upside down on you. And is there any moment that resonates in your mind of something that you, from a guest from your podcast, that felt like you felt like that student where, you know, that moment when you're coaching and you're like, wow, I just realized that this clicked with somebody. Is there anything from your, when you're talking to a guest and you're like, whoa, that actually shifted my perspective on something? Because you're talking to like high level performers and entertainers and creators. What's one or your top couple moments when you're like, wow, I'm so glad I did this podcast, not even for the listeners to gain something from this, but from valuable for me.
So two things. First of all, I interview people, yes, for the listeners, but solely, completely, and entirely for myself. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I take recommendations for people to be on the podcast, but I have a secret, which is that they're really just reminders, because if I've never heard of them, I will not have them on the podcast. And if I have heard of them, then, and I'm interested by them, then they're on my list of people that I want to be on the podcast. So someone says to me, hey, here's this magician who lives here. You've never heard of him. You've never seen anything that he is, but here, check out this. I'm like, I've never heard of him. I've never been emotionally impacted or drawn to this guy. I'm sure he is amazing and phenomenal. I am going to interview all of the people that have impacted me and have impacted my world and have changed me, just because I've decided that's how I go and navigate it. So maybe someone recommends someone, I've never heard of them, and then 8 months or 2 years later, I have heard of them. And then all of a sudden I decide, oh, heck, maybe I do want to interview this guy. He's pretty cool. So everyone I interview is selfishly for me in a pretty hefty way. But the other thing I'll say about that is I actually bring on the magicians to address the problem that I'm struggling with at that moment. So if I'm in my business or in my magic saying like, how do I do this type of trick without it being like this or like that? I'll give you a great example. Every magician says, you know, talk when in your show, talk about yourself. Let people understand your point of view about the world. So I've had a problem with that for a long time, because there are these, and obviously there's a lot of views, but there are these amazing Spanish magicians that don't talk about politics, three secret leads from dealing red and black cards. They are just doing this magic that is hysterically awesomely incredible for its hilariously awesome, incredible, hilarious sake. And that stuff resonated with me. So the best example person is Jamie Ian Swiss. I don't know if you ever read his writing. He is a very intelligent writer in the world of magic. Brilliant essay writer about magic theory. One of the brightest. And he wrote some brilliant essays about expressing yourself. And I was like, okay, I'm going to read all this guy's books and I'm going to bring him on and I'm going to basically pop to him the hardest question I can about this, which is, at the time I was like 25, right? So I'm a 25-year-old with zero life experience, and I don't think my opinions really necessarily are things people need to know about in the world, nor do I have anything that I really think that I need to go and tell these people. What should I do? Should I force my chop cup trick to be about politics or what? Like, what's going on here? Stuck it to him. And I didn't really, I want to get an intelligent answer, but I took the mentor who set the piece of advice that everybody's listening to. And I said, hey, here I am as an actual individual who's actually struggling with this piece of advice. Help, what's going on here? And a lot of the times these magicians really deliver. And a lot of the times they can't really help me with this issue or with whatever the issue of the issue du jour is. And I get help on that. And my last point about this, and I can give you maybe some another specific one or two if you want. But the last point about this is my vernacular about magic and experiences and events and stuff like that comes from the interviews that I had. So where maybe somebody who's incredibly well-read will say to you, in so-and-so's book, they wrote the da-da-da. Or in so-and-so's book, I am as well audio-read as humanly possible because I planned, I interviewed them, I asked them the question, I listened, I scheduled social media posts afterwards. Like, I was beat over the head with the most important concept. So an example of one that I love is I reference Teller every time people talk about, oh, why are these magicians trying to figure out the tricks? Oh, the exposure, all this and that. Teller said something absolutely brilliant. He said, magic is about all parts of magic. That is, the performing, the not knowing how it works, the digging around on the internet, the finding of a magic community, the showing a trick to your friends even though you don't know magic community, the all of it. That's all part of the fun of magic. And I stick that quote in people's face. Not really. I say, this is what Heller said about this, and I agree with him on this piece. I absolutely am educated by these people. I absolutely am a student, so much so that I don't talk in terms of the books that I read. Sometimes, obviously, I'm reading books still, but I talk mostly, I'm interviewing one magician every single week. So I'm talking mostly about, this is what Dan White said about an experience. This is what Juan Tamari said about actually saying stuff in your magic and creativity and writing stuff down. So I'm able to talk about the world based on the people who got the message across to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I've talked about that a bit with my podcast of just how selfish it is. People like, it's like, I always tell, and it's a lot of people come to me asking, oh, how do I get started or advice of whatever. And if just start doing a podcast however you need to, because if there's zero people that ever listen to my podcast, it's probably the most valuable thing that I've like ever done. Because I literally have an excuse to ask people that I want to ask questions
there
to.
There it is.
Thanks.
There it is. Because saying to somebody, hey, can I pick your brain? Is nobody wants their brain picked.
Right.
Nobody wants, like, just in the world of getting help, nobody wants to say, hey, can you help me? Can we just sit down regularly for you to just regularly help me just for the sake of you helping me? And I know that sounds silly, but if you call the best magician in the world and you say, hey, can I like hop on a Skype call with you and ask you every single question that I have about all the magic you've ever published? They'll be like, yeah, this is how much it costs an hour. But if you say, hey, it's a podcast and we'll publish it, they go, yeah, I'm in. It's almost the fact that I'm sharing it with other people that allows me to go and do all these things. I agree. I'm very grateful of that. And I take advantage of that the whole way.
Yeah, it's so good. It's probably the greatest hack of our generation is make a podcast and make it good. You can't make a crappy podcast that's clearly selfish. And it's, hey, I'm like actually helping the listeners. But I think it's one of the biggest hacks of our world.
To be even more meta than that, like every single person who is at least in the entertainment business should be in the content creation business for the exact same reason, is that it's so much easier to ask someone to be involved with you, to collaborate you, to participate with you, for you to serve their needs and for them to help serve your needs when the needs are publicity, sharing, things like that. So I know we're talking about a podcast, but some people aren't good talkers. Some people aren't, like, you've made a good choice. You've made an incredible choice because you are talented and you have the skill set to do it, to put a podcast together that's not only the audio, but also has these amazing video things. Like, I think right now I'm trapped inside a TV or something, or something like that. But you've made those choices. For me, I'm so incapable tech-wise, and especially back in 2016 when I launched this with no budget and no clue, that I was like, I would rather people think that I am in their ears and in whatever room they want to think they're in, I'm in, than actually see the truth of the weird, ugly video of me in my dorm room, towels up in a closet, trying to keep the sound levels low and anything like that. So for me, I was less confident in video and more confident in audio at that time. Now it's a little bit different, but I would say somebody who's listening to this and is thinking about that podcast, oh, I should launch a podcast. Maybe if you want to do it, go on Anchor. It is the easiest way possible. You could start it tomorrow or today. But if you're like, hey, I don't talk like these guys talk, I actually make cool pictures or make videos or like to write long rants. Like Medium exists, Instagram exists, TikTok. Like there's, you should be making YouTube, you should be making some sort of content for the same reason.
An interesting tangent off of that also is, it's like me making content. This is like a little bit different, but it really resonated. I thought of it just now of like, I love going to events and like shows, of any type, concerts, magic shows, anything. But like by being in showbiz world, I hate the idea of being like a regular audience member. I like being like watching it from the back of the room. I don't really want to be at the front row of any show. I want to be there like side stage or like back of the row, sure. Back row watching. experiencing, because I like watching the audience as much as I like watching the performances. And kind of like that same sense of the best way to get, like, I've experienced some of the craziest concerts and shows from the best perspectives because I'm helping film them. And that's an interesting little, there's something that I think will resonate with some people there of, I get a lot of access because I tell somebody, hey, can I come, like a show that I want to go to, hey, can I come help you film your show? And now I have a backstage all access pass because I'm helping them film their show. And there's something in that that I think is really like somehow tangent to that idea.
I would 1,000,000% agree. And I would also say that it is so darn easy to connect with your heroes. And also, if you have any service, if you do anything, entertainment, like literally, if you do anything, you have a way to use your service to help you get in contact with this person and to serve this person. The number of people that I have met that are nowhere near the magic industry, just by sticking my nose in the business and using magic to help me get, just, I'll do this, sure, I'll do this, is astronomical. And I think the same thing you're talking about with video, and the same thing is true in every, and then just with interviewing magicians, it's the same thing. I think our skills, whatever they are, magic, anything, are the keys that are gonna let us go do all of the coolest things that we want to do. There's no question. I think of so many magicians as an example that will travel the world because they will lecture at IVMs all over the world, not the other way around. It's not, and that's part of the fun. When I go to a new city, I want to meet the magicians there more than I want to see the ancient landscapes. Sorry, my grade 10 history teacher, but that's just part of it because that's what's taken me there.
Yeah. It's amazing. And to double back on that is, even if you don't have access to somebody, if you're, and this, again, this is like a heavy on, you could remix one of your favorite, if you're a juggler or a magician, like use one of your favorite artist's songs and make a viral TikTok video. And then you might be invited. Like, I've been in music videos.
Totally.
Because of, they're like, whoa, this is awesome. Be in our music video of some bands and stuff. And it's like, there's infinite things that can connect of that don't make any sense unless you're like thinking about, oh, what if I do this? Or if you're a graphic designer, you could take somebody's speech from a keynote or a magic thing and do a graphic thing or a motion graphic thing and remix their thing and then show it to them. They're like, this is amazing. Can you do this to all the videos that I have from all the tricks? It's like infinite things that can happen.
It's so easy. Yeah, it's so easy to make content. I think one of the traps that people fall into is, I always think to myself this, one hand, I hear this like Noah Kagan, someone I've referenced a few times, but I really love him. But he said something called the 10-year rule. He said, just work on anything for 10 years, stick to any project for 10 years and it'll be successful. And I basically agree with him, right? I feel really good about that logic and reasoning and all the reasons why. And then every now and again, you find a YouTube channel that's been uploading a video every day for 7 years and they have like 80 people who watch it. And you're just thinking to yourself, what is going on over here? What are they messing up? And I think one of the answers, and this is something that could be unpacked in a million ways, is just thinking about value and thinking about actually doing something that's helpful to an individual, to the world, whatever. And a lot of those people, if you go and watch, it's day 1,012 of how I feel about like potato chips or something, whatever. It's something that has no actual use. Even the potato chips is somewhat more valuable than what these things are. There's got to be some utility. It could be for an individual, like you're describing, take their speech, take their song. It could be for a community. Hey, here's three ways to do this. Here's a secret to this. Here's not to do. Here, it's got to be useful and valuable. And if you're doing something and you look at every piece of content under a microscope and you go, This is useful. Someone might actually derive an iota of benefit or value out of this. Your business will grow. Your career will grow. Just keep doing stuff like that.
Yeah. That's awesome. I think that's, I think that'll spark, especially for, so let's, I'm going to open it up for me myself. If you have an idea, if you're whatever you are, performer, graphic designer, videographer, photographer, I want the challenge. Hit me up however you can find me on Instagram or whatever. And if you can't think of a way that you can use your thing in a creative way that like no one else has been thinking about, hit me up on whatever Instagram at One Man Variety, and I want to jam. I want to be challenged by coming up with new ideas as a side thing. So people that are listening, hit me up.
I used to speak at high schools. And one thing I would literally do with the high schools is I would have someone in the audience raise their hand and talk about a cause that they really liked. Mm-hmm. I would have someone else raise their hand and talk about a hobby that they had. Then I would have a third person figure out a way to serve that cause with that hobby. And I've never had a group of students not figure it out.
Yeah.
Like they've always figured it out every single time with no hesitation. It's, hey, I like dance. Hey, the Cancer Society. Hey, let's host a dance competition. Done. Boom. Like, yeah. It's unlimited. I'm just playing with those. And to put another little nugget in the world of charity, if you're worried about launching something, do it for charity first. Because if it flops, you make some money for charity. And if it succeeds, you make a bunch of money for charity. And there's no way to fail. So take your skill. And if you're worried about doing this out in the real world, go do it for charity. And you'll realize that it'll be okay.
Yeah. Love it. So we'll tie this up here in a few minutes, but we'll practice the exercise of this, of doing something, and you get to do something, and you get to do, you share it graciously with the world, but you get to do these things selfishly. So my selfish question to you, and this will be mostly relevant with what you're doing, kind of all the aspects of what you're doing. I think mostly with the Toronto Magic Company, as far as taking this idea, you spent a lot of time building this experience that's designed for in-person big theaters, slowly building it up. Then you get hit with you can't do this thing that you would have never imagined that you can't do. You build it, you did everything, that gets taken away. You have to pivot. Okay, virtual and then hybrid, and oh, shows are coming back slowly. Oh, maybe not. Maybe then in the end of 2021, for people listening to this in the distant future, we don't know, like, it's like very mysterious what's going to happen. Day to day, things are changing. In that state, and I would imagine later in the future, things are going to be changing. I would imagine things are going to be changing forever. What's the way, so Between Dreams does podcasts, and we do these live music sessions, and we're like all over, we're doing a lot of things, and it's a combo of online experiences, in-person experiences, and trying to merge them all together, creating experiences for people to enjoy in whatever the current world is happening. What's your biggest takeaway right now for somebody like Between Dreams that's trying to do a little bit of in all of those things? We're doing online content very heavily. We're also working on a lot of in-person events. Like, we had a few, and once things opened up, we had 2 events last month. Now we're like, oh, maybe not anymore. And we're doing like 40-person in-person events. And now we're like back away. In that world, after you've experienced the ups and downs of that, what is somebody who wants to combo online and in-person and not knowing what's going to happen? How do you approach that in a way that you don't just get hit with frustration of building a big thing and then be like, oh, actually that's canceled. And what's your takeaway for that?
So 2 quick thoughts. So the first one is, are you having fun?
Yeah.
Are you enjoying like figuring the whole thing out, doing it virtual in person? Are you enjoying it?
Yeah. I personally really enjoy that, but I do find myself getting that frustration of, oh, I like worked on this in-person thing and now it's gone. And it's like, it's hard for me to practice what I preach of adapt or die. Yeah. Are you going to complain or are you going to make it better? That's easy to say, hard to be part of your soul and actually act it out.
Yeah. So the first thing is, the reason I brought that up is because as long as things are at least working and you got your head on your shoulders and you're having fun, like, We're gonna get through this. Like, eventually the dust will settle. It'll stop being Delta this and the dust will settle. I don't know where it's gonna settle. Maybe everyone will have face shields and masks on in bubbles. Maybe no one will be wearing anything and everyone will be bad. I don't know where the line will cross. I don't know where it's gonna fall. But at some point, this ebbing and flowing is gonna just relax. So right now we're steering through it. And if you've got enough money to pay for rent and you're working on fun and exciting projects, then enjoy the ride of No one knows what the hell's going on. I only know a little bit more than you do, but not really. I'm only joking, but I'm saying like, all I know is that I've got my inquiries and the inquiries of all the people that I coach, which is at least maybe a little bit more data points, but I don't know anything more than you. I don't know anything more than you about what's happening. So if you're having fun, keep doing it, keep enjoying it. It's going to be twisty and turny. And I would say, don't stress. It'll be fun. And sometimes you have to adjust a little bit along the way. For example, after we did our first unconventional.fun, the virtual magic convention, we said, this was so fun, we're going to do four of them in 2021. Think about this. We did one convention in 2020, then we said we're going to do four in 2021. Have you ever heard of any convention ever in your life that has done four in one year, the year after the year that they did their first?
Yeah.
Never. So what happened? Our first one was really good. Our second one was really good. Our third one was really good, but with a little bit of smaller attendance. And now we're promoting the third, and it's a convention. It's a virtual convention happening at the end of August when things are opening up.
Yeah.
And unless there's Delta raging through, or you want to be at home, or whatever the case may be, we're having a little bit of trouble with people going, I just had 2 years of virtual and I want to move on. So I think we're going to sell a lot of tickets right before the day of, because we have Danny Ortiz and Garrett Thomas and Harapano. Like, we've got great people and everyone's going to realize they're doing nothing that weekend. And we usually sell like more than half our tickets the week before. But we can feel it in the water that people aren't as fired up as they were about this as they were however many months ago. And all that means is that the fourth convention that we are still going to be doing in November, maybe it's going to be even less exciting. Maybe it's going to, I don't know. What we learn at this convention dictates to us how much effort and marketing materials and whatever, and team effort and whatever we're going to put towards pulling that off. We may just say, hey, this is our last one ever. This was fun. Or we may say to ourselves, hey, this is epic. This is the last one. And we're going to go even bigger because we noticed this and that and that. So I think our virtual convention didn't exist 2 years ago. So I have to honor the fact that who knows what's going to happen with it. It's a beta thing that didn't know that it was even going to exist in the first place. So it's amorphous. And I want to give that the respect that it deserves. But so my big idea is, as long as you're having fun, as long as you're paying for the bills, as long as your things are working, people are wanting to work together with you, the customer and the client both have to adapt. If your customer used to do in-person shows all over and they needed videos, now they have to do virtual something and they need virtual videos.
Yeah.
My clients used to do big in-person events and now they need big virtual events. The people that I coach, like, every single thing is just going to be a little bit different. Especially if you're in the entertainment business, a little bit different. So I think roll with the punches for the time being, plan as you like. And the final bit maybe I can leave with this is something that Tim Ferriss says, which is, laugh at 1 year and 5 year plans. You plan 3 and 6 months into the future. 5 year plans are a joke. I don't know anybody who can even partially even predict what they're going to be doing in 5 years. And I think COVID was a huge reminder to everybody that our 5 year plans and 10 year plans get laughed at and get spit on by life. So have a 3 month plan and you will always be fine. No tide is going to turn so fast in 3 months that it's not going to work. Set your 3 month plan, execute, and look about 3 months into the future and you won't have any trouble. And that's what I've been doing. And there's been lulls. There's been things that we try that work. There's been things that we try that don't work. But as long as I'm going, I've got my pulse on the socio-political going-ons. I think I have a hunch where things are going. I know the options. I know what's going to happen. So nothing is going to catch me off guard. I'm going to try to plan instead of 5 years, 5 months, 4 months, 3 months. And I think that makes things a little bit easier.
Yeah. I love that because, and it makes you scale back those ideas a little bit too. I'm not going to do this grand thing. It makes smaller chunks of actually things that you can accomplish. So that's awesome. And the idea of having fun, it seems so obvious and so easy to forget that most of, if we're doing something creative, we started off because it was pretty fun and we really enjoyed it. So going back and remembering that is amazing.
The pandemic has been the most creative fun that I have had in by far the longest time since I've become a professional. It has the most creative fun because it just all of a sudden took me back to you're in the basement with your best magician friend and you're staying up all night working on this trick just for the sake of cuz and just working on this project all night long because there's nothing to do tomorrow. Life is meaningless. All there is this project. And not really, but like I got to just engage my full attention, my full body in my full being into fun projects. And that's so invigorating compared to where we've got so much life crowding the little bit of fun that we get to have. And I think it was maybe a reminder for a lot of us to have some fun. So I'm glad that you flagged that. Cause I think for me, at least the last 2 years, although they've been weird and really, really challenging, they've been super fun.
Yeah. Awesome. That's amazing. I think there's a couple amazing things. I usually end these episodes with a little bit of a take home quick message. And we just did it exactly where you just landed it. And that was like the perfect recap. So we've already got the outro kind of recap of a take home, the most powerful take home. So we'll tie it up and give you a minute to guide people. So you've got like a bunch of places to guide people that want to learn more about you between all of the things that you talked about. So bullet point those out where they can find about all of the things that you're up to.
Yes. Okay. So if you live anywhere near Toronto and you either have events or come to ticket events or more likely are a performer and want to potentially be on lineups or be booked out for events, info@torontomagiccompany.com. You got to actually live near the city. It's helpful. But if you're going to be near the city or whatever for a ticket, anything like that, you want to come to see a ticket, you are a performer and you're interested in learning more about what we do, anything like that, info@torontomagiccompany.com. I would love to meet you. That's uno. Number two, I know I just mentioned that the convention that we're running might not be as large as the convention was a couple months ago, but we literally brought the best names in magic to do a virtual convention. This convention is in outer space. So you get to walk around a video game world with the arrow keys and you're a video game character and you walk around in outer space. And when you get near other characters, your camera fades into view and you get to hang out and jam with them. And it's like a convention, but better. You don't have to wear pants. And it's really, 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 really awesome. And the best magicians in the world literally hang out all afternoon in this virtual world. It's like Habbo Hotels, but with a video camera that pops up too. So really awesome. That website is unconventional.fun. And if this comes out before the end of August, then go check it out because the convention is happening August 28th and 29th. And it's 2 days and there's even events happening overnight, no matter where you are in the world with your time zone, because it's in outer space. So there's no day and night. That's number two. The last thing I'm going to tell you about is discourseinmagic.com, which is where I interviewed 200 plus magicians about theory and business. And it's also the hub in which I coach magicians to grow their business. So if you want to hear the podcast, just go to wherever you listen to this and type in the name of your favorite magician and I probably interviewed them already. So take a look there. If you want to either just find out about what I do, potentially work together, get some help, then on the website, discourseandmagic.com, there's lots of places to put in your email and lots of ways for us to get to connected and see if I can help.
Thanks so much for joining. And finally, to tie it all up, if you did make it to the end of this episode and think there was something particularly valuable in there, share it with another performer or creator so they can get the value as well. And that'll do it for us. Thank you so much, Jonah, for sharing.
Thank you, Chris.
Everything. And listeners at home, we'll catch you on the next one.
Thank you. Take care, guys.